It's the True Penny Show at the G1.
Hello and welcome to the True Penny Show. My name is James True Penny. This is indeed my show, and we are back on the G1 Climax coverage for nights 7, 8, and 9 of this year's G1 Climax tournament, the 28th tournament since 1992, it's going well. We're enjoying it. It's a lot of fun. It's a bit intense. There's a lot of good wrestling on this weekend, and this is part of it. Actually, we'll probably end up missing the beginning of ITV's Return of the World of Sport Wrestling tonight, but we'll probably have something on that on the True Penny Show sooner rather than later. In fact, there is a good piece in the Daily Mirror today, so if you want to go back online and find it, written by our guest today, Mr. Mo Chatra.
Hello, James.
Hello. Yes, the Daily Mirror, you former writer of Power Slam Magazine, writer of Total Wrestling Magazine, lots of other projects as well. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm glad to be on at last.
Indeed. And also joining us today, welcome back, Christy from Wrestling Sexism and New Japan Gifts. Thank you very much for your time as well, ma'am.
No problem. It was fun the last time, so I'm happy to be back.
That's good. We haven't scared you away. That's good.
Not in the couple of days since the last time, no.
Usually takes more time than that. Give us a week. Okay, then. So, night 7 opened with a match from Yoshihashi. It was quite good, and Yoshihashi won, and we were very happy about that. Christy, what did you think of this?
Yay!
There you go.
I was very happy. He did well.
He did. He did well. Mo, what did you think of this?
Yeah, his hair looks better than normal. he acquitted himself as well as could be expected under the circumstances. So, no, it was perfectly fine, perfectly enjoyable, relatively speaking. So, yep. Good to see. Let's move on.
Indeed. It's nice to know that you've got the True Penny Show groove because you started talking about hair in the first match you review.
I wasn't the one this time.
No. We spend an inordinate amount of time talking about hair on this podcast. And Yoshihashi is a repeat offender, I must admit. Yes, this is true. Okay, the next matchup was Evil of Los Ignorables de Japón. He defeats Bad Luck Fale by DQ in 12 minutes and 13 seconds. Bit of a theme for Bad Luck Fale in this tournament. Thoroughly enjoyable in the time period, though. And I must admit, bit of a man of the match award to Tama Tonga and Tangaloa for more interruptions that were really, really fun to watch. Mo, what did you think about this? And what do you think about the current firing squad Bullet Club OG angle and how it's developing through the tournament?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's something that has come in for a fair amount of criticism online. There's a lot of people that absolutely hate it and don't like the extent to which there's all this outside interference, the referee bumps and all the rest of it. I think when it's well done, it's actually done in a quite Dragon Gate-esque way, and it actually adds to the match in certain cases rather than detracts from it. And I thought this was more the former. I thought that it kind of weaved itself quite well into the match, and they are clearly there as very strong heels, and harking back to the old early days of Gedo and Jado from the FMW era, and I think as long as the ref bumps are done in moderation, I do feel over the tournament it has been perhaps overdone, but the outside interference and less angry or upset about, and I think in this case it actually worked okay. And for a Fale match, I actually thought it turned out pretty well, so I thought it was quite a pleasing encounter, and good to see Evil get a victory.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on this. I think it's been done really well, and also like I said on the previous podcast with Christy, it kind of harks back to the early days of Bullet Clubs, just exactly what they used to do, and everyone went nuts then. But there was less people watching then. Now you've got a big, major international audience and there's expectations. It has so much more impact.
Yeah, no, that's right. And, there's perhaps unrealistic expectations about New Japan in that everything should be perfect and everything should be absolutely fantastic and there should be no outside interference and everything should be exactly the same as everything else. And, what Gedo is doing here is just trying to mix it up a little and I think people are missing the point. These characters are supposed to aggravate us. They are supposed to get on our nerves. So if that's the case, then job done. I think it's worked quite well. As I say, I think the ref bump stuff has been overdone, but the rest of it, the outside interference, usually has been okay.
Okay, then. Christy, what did you think of this matchup?
Well, just like I said last time, I understand all the interference and the Bullet Club stuff, because Farley is not going to win the tournament. He's just here for the storyline, for the Bullet Club OG stuff. So I get it. I don't enjoy it so much as I like the way they're working it, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
They're using it to further the story that both him and Tama Tonga are in, without putting them in a position where they might win the tournament, because Fale is usually a strong contender. So they had to have a reason not to give him all these points he normally wins. So they're giving him DQs, and it's to further the storyline instead of just him as a G1 contender.
Yeah, indeed. Right then, we move on to the next match, which I found really interesting, because King of the Heels versus the new King of the Heels, Minoru Suzuki, defeated Jay White in 10 minutes and 35 seconds. This was a fun match. I really enjoyed this. I love Minoru Suzuki, as most people know, and I'm really getting into Jay White at the moment. I did say he's the future of No Japan Pro Wrestling, which is a big statement, but I stand by it, and I think he's going to do big things in the company in the next few years. Christy, what did you think of this matchup?
Oh, this was my favorite of this day, I think. I just really enjoy the contradiction. Well, not so much contradiction, but the fact that Suzuki is better than White at the whole being a heel thing.
Yeah.
It seems that White is losing to the heels and beating the faces. And I think that's because while White is a good heel, he's not at the point where the others are yet. And Suzuki was just showing him what being a real bastard was like. And kicking his ass, because Suzuki is just better at everything than White is right now.
Indeed.
And that was just so much fun.
Yeah, it was such a fun match to watch. And I just love Minoru Suzuki. You know, 50 years old and he's producing matches like this. It's just insane. It really is. Like, the standard of work he's put in this year, in his 30th year. It's like, right, I've got to try even harder now. Mo, what did you think of this?
Yeah, I thought it was a good match. I will upset you, though, James, unfortunately. Jay White isn't my cup of tea. Sorry.
It's all right. It's okay.
Now, here's my thing with Jay. I think technically he's actually really good. And he had a match with somebody I sharp name earlier in the tournament that I thought was actually a heck of a match. And, you know, technically, as I say, Jay White is very, very talented, but I think he still has a fair way to go in it when it comes to his heel work. It doesn't feel quite as natural and as organic with him. It feels a bit more contrived and, oh, I've got to do something that's a bit heel-like.
Yeah.
And with Suzuki, it just comes so naturally, and, you know, it just is so believable that he is this prick, this arsehole. Whereas with White, he comes across like this timid guy that's acting heel. And I think that in time it will come. You know, I think back to somebody like an Art Bar from the Los Gringos Locos days. And this is for younger listeners, a guy who used to team with Eddie Guerrero in Triple R. And he was a heck of a heel in Triple R or Triple A, to anglicize it. But if you look back to his WCW days around 1990-ish, he seemed so bland, so generic. He was completely worlds apart from the fantastic heel that he became. And I think White is probably on the same sort of journey as well. I mean, even Eddie Guerrero just mentioned, you know, you think back to some of his earlier days, he didn't really exhibit the kind of large-in-life, charismatic individual that he ended up becoming in the WWE. And I think White, you know, is developing that respect. You know, he's only 25, let's not forget. So I think that in due course he can become a real asset to New Japan Pro Wrestling, but he's still a work in progress for me. So he is, for me, roughed around the edges, and I thought this was a good opportunity to kind of show a storyline element of, okay, I'm going to outwit you, you're the master heel, I'm going to be that young up-and-comer that can outwit you, even though ultimately, if I might lose, I'll out-trick you in certain respects. And there wasn't really any of that in this match either. So I felt it was a bit of a a little missed opportunity there, but overall, I thought it was a very solid contest.
Okay, then. I've already asked Christy about this match, haven't I? Have I? No.
Yes,
I have. Sorry. Right. Moving on then. Hiroshi Tanahashi defeated Hangman Page. Hangman, I'm really into at the moment. He's doing really, really well. And he's kind of switching back between face and heel as he goes through this match, depending on who he's wrestling. So he's kind of getting some mixed signals, but he's still doing some really cool and interesting stuff. Hiroshi Tanahashi is Hiroshi Tanahashi. He's just amazing. And I've really enjoyed this match. Probably a little bit on the short side, but equally, you've kind of got to save these guys for a long couple of weeks ahead. Mo, what did you think of this one?
Yeah, so I thought that in this one, it very much felt like they were holding themselves back, not really going full pelt like they had in some of the earlier nights of the tournament. And obviously, they know that they've got some grueling matches to come over the next couple of weeks. So I thought that they worked something like a house show type match. Didn't really go all guns blazing. I liked the spot where they had each other's legs, and Tanahashi did that kind of heel thing where he was letting the leg down, but then went for the dragon screw leg whip. I thought that was pretty clever. It was just a safe contest. You know, it was about just getting through it without trying wearing each other down, and moving on to the next night, a few nights later. So it was a good match, but for me, nothing really more than that. But for me, that's fine. I mean, they've all got to work such a crazy schedule, have to work really, really grueling matches. So, you know, it's fine for them to have these kind of quieter off nights as well.
Yeah, I think this is the thing. It is like, this run is unbelievable. I mean, they went to San Francisco, they had 4 days off, and then they're on a 20-date tour, or 19-date tour in the space of 3 weeks, or just over 3 weeks. It's insane. It really is. And a lot of those matches have to be like Wrestle Kingdom quality matches. They can't pull punches. So occasionally, once in a while, they'll not phone it in, but they'll certainly have something that's more entertainment-based than wrestling-based, and I have no problem with that. And this was a good example of how to keep the crowd interested in a match that doesn't have a ton of heat and isn't necessarily massively important to either guy. So it was well done for what it was. What did you think of it, Christy?
I enjoyed it. Also because I think that Tanahashi has taken a liking to Paige.
Yeah.
Because he's been talking positively about him, and he's said something like, I'm going to remove the poison from him in a backstage bit. And I was like, okay, you really like this guy. So Tanahashi sees something in Paige, and I agree with that. And I think they had a really fun chemistry together. And also the leg spot that Mo mentioned, that was a reference to the night before when they'd done the same thing, but Paige had been the one who didn't let go and who used it as a heel move. And this time it was Tanahashi who was like, okay, I'm not going to let go. I'm going to use it against you. And it was just really fun. And I think that Paige looked less nervous than he'd done when he was wrestling Okada. Which is good, he's learning, but also that he's able to have a good, fun match with someone like Tanahashi and not be nervous. So I think the G1 is really good for him as a learning experience as well.
Yeah, it was, I mean, there's a lot of fun this match to watch, so I recommend it, because it's not as heavy as well. Because also, from like emotionally, if you keep having these emotionally draining matches, they lose impact after a while. It's not dynamically good. So it was well worth putting this match here. Something that was a bit more emotionally driven was Kazuchika Okada. He defeated Togi Makabe in 15 minutes and 11 seconds. Makabe, again, pulling things out for a guy his age and for his experience that I didn't think he was still capable of, but he still has some good matches in him and he still brings them out when he needs to. Christy, what did you think of this?
Yeah, I like this. I like the strange Okada. We talked about it last time as well. I like the balloon maker, as he's called. He's weird. He doesn't really seem to respect anyone, but at the same time, he's there to have fun with them. It's a kind of weird contrast, because he was mocking Makabe quite a lot in the beginning, and he was smiling and he was acting like he was having fun. And then at some point, he just turned around, he became serious, and they had a real wrestling match. I really enjoyed it. Maybe not my favorite match of the tournament, but there has been some amazing matches, so that doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah, you're grading on a scale with this one, aren't you, really?
Yeah.
Mo, what did
Even
you...
for Makabe and Okada.
Mo, what did you think of this?
For me, it was slightly my match of the night, just ahead of one or two of the others. I thought it was quite enjoyable, actually. As you say, Makabe certainly brought it in this contest. And, you know, I mean, for me, Makabe is somebody who I think over time can still give quite a few more years to the G1, almost like a less legendary equivalent of somebody like a Genichiro Tenryu, who just has this kind of throwback aura about him of somebody who's a bit lumpy, not quite so athletic, but he has this kind of brawlerish style, and you know, especially against you know the pretty boy types, you know, can make for a nice contrast. And you know, I think he's smart enough when it comes to these types of matches. He's been doing it for 10 or 12 years now to pull out some good ones. I mean, this wasn't one of his better matches, certainly not, but you know, I still found it quite an enjoyable one, and I think he has a role to play, unlike one or two others within the G1, who we'll perhaps come on to shortly. But I you know, found the performance good, and you know, by Okada's very, very, very high standards, this was nowhere near one of his great matches. But again, it like the earlier Tanahashi match, bit of a okay, let's take it slightly easy this one and go a bit more full pelt later in the tournament.
Yeah, definitely. One of the things we've talked about before on the Trupany show is that Makabe doesn't seem to get the respect from Western fans that other people do, and we're wondering if that's to do with the fact he rarely comes on tour to either the Ring of Honor shows or the Rev Pro shows, which we thought was maybe something, and partly because his hot period in New Japan was well before New Japan World, and even before they had a streaming service, the streaming service they had before New Japan World. So it's kind of like, I think Makabe gets some false positive with Western fans about how important he really is.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, some people might not even be aware that he actually won the G1 about 10 years ago, I think it was.
Yeah.
So, you know, he was at one point somebody who the company was grooming to be, you know, a top star until the likes of Tanahashi then really broke through, and from a work rate perspective, just were at the next level, unfortunately for Makabe, and they surpassed him. But, you know, he is an underrated performer. You know, if you research him on YouTube, I'm sure you can find, or Dailymotion, find some really, really good matches from the last 10 or 12 years featuring Makabe, especially from G1 tournaments. He really does come to life in the tournament, but even outside of the G1, you know, he's done plenty of really good stuff. So yeah, you're quite right, he is one of these underrated performers who, because he hasn't been one of the more featured, more high profile guys, who hasn't come on tours, as you say, in the last 3-4 years, whilst New Japan's popularity in the West, in the, you know, Europe, United States, has really skyrocketed, he is one of the more forgotten types. But yeah, he's absolutely valuable player on the New Japan roster, no doubt about it.
Okay, then we move on to the G1 Climax Night 8, which was started with a match featuring Hirooki Goto and, of course, Toru Yano, which lasted 2 minutes and 17 seconds. And Goto won, which will make somebody happy. I'll talk to her in a moment. But first, Mo, what did you think of this?
Well, I mean, I think Yano is an acquired taste. I think there are those that find him absolutely hilarious. There are those that absolutely hate the fact that he's in the G1 each year.
Ben Spindler.
I think he's got a role to play, you know. And some of his matches this tournament, especially the one against Ibushi, you know, was just absolutely fantastic, relatively speaking. And I thought that this wasn't, you know, it was, you know, how much can they really do in 2 minutes? But let's face it, I mean, Yano always has these shorter matches in. He always has to have a couple of really, really short matches. And this was one of those nights when he had to have a really short one where he wasn't really going to get much of his comedy shtick in. And Goto wasn't really going to play along with that kind of stuff. So, you know, it is what it is. It was a quick 2-minute match and Goto was in and out. And job done, but nothing much more you can say than that.
No, yeah, Well, everyone knows how much I love Yano, but sadly he couldn't pull this one out. He doesn't get wound up until the second week anyway. You know, I'm looking, this weekend is Yano's time to shine, and he will get to that final, probably not. Anyway, Christy, what did you think of this match? Because I'm assuming you're quite happy.
Well, I'm always happy when Goto wins. I kind of like Yano, but I have a clear favorite, so I was always going to root for Goto. But Yano has to have short matches, and Goto just had matches with Omega that went long and with Ishii that went long. So I think they were like, okay, we're going to have to give Goto a shorter match. I think in today's show, they mentioned that he'd had the most time in matches spent up till then, or right, something like that. I think Kevin Kelly said something like that. So for Goto's sake, it was good that this match was short.
Well booked, one has to say. Yeah. Okay, then. The next match was Tetsuya Naito, and he defeated Tama Tonga in 10 minutes and 6 seconds in another thoroughly fun interference-led match, which had Evil and Bushi and Bad Luck Fale and Tama Tonga and Tangela. It was awesome. I love this match. Even the interference was thoroughly entertaining. Christy, what did you think of this?
I liked it. I like that Naito and Tama are the same kind of extra guys who are just... They want to have fun while they're wrestling. They can be really silly and really serious whenever they want to be. And they've got that kind of chemistry together where they know that they can put on a fun show for everyone and they can have fun themselves as well. And I really liked that. And LIJ show that you can actually show up and protect your stable mates when they're being attacked by Bullet Club. So that's always nice.
Yeah.
No, I really like this.
The Chaos guys have not been doing that for Jay White this time.
They don't care.
No, leave. He'll be fine. He'll be all right. Yeah, he can look after himself.
We're on commentary and we're still not going to do anything.
No, it'll be okay. Jay's good. Yes. Mo, what did you think of this matchup? And a good question actually for both of you is, where's Tetsuya Naito stand in this tournament? Because he's kind of been floating. His dance partner long term is Chris Jericho, and Chris Jericho ain't here. So what do you... I'll ask Christy again that question again in a second. But Mo, what do you think of this match, and where do you think Naito fits at the moment?
I really enjoyed the match. Again, loads of interference, as you mentioned. Again, very Dragon Gate-esque in all the run-ins, and some clever spots as well, like the Bushi missed to the face of Fale on the powerbomb spot. That was quite nice. And, you know, even in the build-up before all the interference, you know, it was kind of heating up quite well. And, you know, some good spots towards the end, and obviously the Destino finish for Naito. In terms of his position, I had a feel that he was perhaps a dark horse coming into this tournament. I thought that the Intercontinental title loss was a surprise to many, and perhaps that was to lead to possibly another G1 victory for him. To then create a possible big match at the Wrestle Kingdom show in January. But it's still a bit hard to tell. I don't quite get the sense just yet that, you know, he's going to have this amazing run and get to the final night and win the tournament. But, you know, that's the beauty of the booking of the G1 as well, that sometimes, you know, especially now that it's out over a month pretty much, you know, they can tell several stories even during the tournament. With Naito, I think there's something big planned for him. But it might just not be winning the G1, though.
Christy, what do you think about Naito and his chances in this particular tournament?
Well, his chances, I don't know so much. But I think that it's very clear that they don't really have anything for him to do right now. So they gave him the Sonata story. Because they put the match with Sonata near the end.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, this is going to be his story for the G1. We're going to tease it every match, especially because now they have to wrestle together in the tag matches as well. So we're going to give him that storyline for the G1. And I don't see anything else that they're giving to him during the G1.
Yeah.
I think that's the main focus, and that's the only thing they care about during the G1. And what happens after is what happens after.
Yeah, I'm thinking Destruction is probably where you're going to get Chris Jericho versus mm-hmm. Naito again. Or, well, King of Pro Wrestling is the obvious one, but they have to spread these championship matches out because, you know, they need main events. Destruction has three nights and they need three main events for that. So they might save that till then and leave the IWGP Heavyweight Championship standing by itself at King of Pro Wrestling, which is what they've tended to do in the past. So we'll see what happens anyway. Next match up was Zack Sabre Jr. defeating Tomohiro Ishii, 14 minutes and 35 seconds of an outstanding professional wrestling match. And I love both these guys, but this was just showed exactly why Zack Sabre Jr.'s style works in this tournament environment, works so well in New Japan Pro Wrestling, because he can take a big bruise like Ishii and do something with him that people just haven't done before. And he made him wrestle made Ishii wrestle his game. Christy, what did you think of this matchup?
These two are my favorites, but I always love their matches. They're not in my top three guys, but I always love what they do. And this was another one of those. I'm always surprised by how Zack can turn Ishii inside out, because Ishii looks like he's made of a block of wood and that's it. He doesn't bend or anything, but Zack is still able to get his legs over his head and stuff like that, and it's always amazing. And Ishii tapping was also a big surprise to me and really amazing. It shows the confidence they have in Zack to give him these important victories in important ways.
Yeah,
so I really loved it.
He's made pretty much everyone at the top end of the New Japan roster tap within the last 12 months, which mm-hmm. is really interesting. Me and Alex Watt were discussing whether he would be the challenger at King of Pro Wrestling, because it would make a good story for Omega to wrestle somebody who's not wrestled anybody before like that, because they have to give Omega some depth. You know, he's wrestled Okada and he's wrestled Cody, who are kind of similar style people, so he needs somebody different to give some depth to this championship run, and I think Zack Sabre Jr. is just the guy to do that with. Mo, what did you think of this match?
Oh, loved it. Absolutely loved it. It was almost impossible for them not to have a great match because they are so consistent. I mean, it's very rare that in singles contests, especially, that they have anything other than a really, really good match. So, you know, no surprises there. But, you know, I'm slightly disappointed because, you know, Ishii is one of these really unheralded guys. I mean, obviously, he's very highly rated amongst fans, but he just never seems to get this really major run in the G1, and you know he's always ending up on 8 or 10 points, so 4 or 5 wins tournament, and it looks like he's on track to probably achieve the same again this year. And you know, it'd be really good to have him do something really against the kind of run of the grain and upset the apple cart and be that dark horse that gets to the final. So you know, that sort of thing, I was thinking back to when Riki Choshu got to the G1 final and won it in 96, you know, at that point he was considered this old beaten up veteran, and you know, people didn't really give him a chance, but you know, he just tore up that tournament, and you know, it was almost like his last hurrah, and that was one of the memorable G1s. And you know, he's not getting any younger, is Ishii, and he's still somebody who is an elite performer. He really can go. But I just wonder, given all the wars that he has, how much longer he can go for. And I really would like to think that before he gets to the point where he's certainly visibly past his prime, he can have, at the very least, a really great G1. Even if he doesn't win it, even if he gets to the final, that would just be an amazing thing to see. So it's clearly not going to happen this year. Well, at least it doesn't look like it will. But hopefully next year will be that time.
I mean, there's also as well, even if he does win the G1, he doesn't have to go to Wrestle Kingdom, because they defend that championship. He could lose it at King of Pro Wrestling, or he could lose it at Destruction. You know, he could have the championship run, take the G1, have the trophy, and, you know, still be heralded as the G1 champion, even if he doesn't get the title shot.
Oh, that's right, yeah. I mean, you know, Gedo's a creative booker, and, you know, he can come up with an assortment of ways to have that kind of feel-good story with Ishii whilst not upsetting longer-term storylines. So no, there's plenty of permutations that can easily make both things happen. But based on the results thus far, 2 wins so far, looking unlikely, but you never know.
Okay, then. Moving on to the semi-main event of this particular evening, which was the IWGP heavyweight champion Kenny Omega defeating Juice Robinson in 15 minutes and 31 seconds. The continuing story of Juice Robinson's broken left hand, which has been like the best device in this tournament. They've done so much with it. They've told so many little stories with it. And it's protected Juice because he hasn't won anything yet. He hasn't beaten anybody. It's been genius and it's worked really well. It's an old territory booking idea. I can remember somebody doing something similar at Cleethorpes Memorial Hall when I was a kid. It would be Max Crabtree booked an angle, young lad, broken hand, and the match worked around that broken hand for, you know, it's as old as the hills, but it works really well. Mo, what are your thoughts of this? Your thoughts on Juice and your thoughts on Kenny as IWGP Heavyweight Champion in this G1 tournament?
Yeah, so, I mean, Juice is somebody who is worlds apart to the guy that we saw in NXT as CJ Parker, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
He has really had a really good year this year. He's had some fantastic matches and... when he first came into the G1, I thought, look, this guy doesn't belong. But, you know, he has proven himself now over the last couple of years that he absolutely belongs. And again, a couple of the matches he's had earlier in the tournament, you know, were, in my view, really, really good. I absolutely love this contest as well. I thought it was very enjoyable. Perhaps a bit too spotty for some, perhaps. But, Omega works that kind of style, so for me it was perfectly fine. Some of the counters towards the end also really added to the drama, and with the V-trigger leading to the one-week angel finish, that was really, really good. Omega is champion in this tournament. I personally don't like to see the champion in the tournament. I prefer not to see that, but they perhaps think that, look, we want to put on the best tournament we possibly can. But you then say, well, why have you got Tama Tonga in the tournament? But we'll get on to that.
Controversial.
With Kenny in the tournament, he's already had a couple of fantastic, fantastic matches. And I think the feel is that, look, generally the champion is a very, very good worker, and having him in the tournament really adds to it and allows us to put on even more great matches than we normally would. So that's all well and good. And if they book it cleverly, then they can perhaps have the champ lose a couple of contests, which then can lead to big matches in October or even at the show in January with Wrestle Kingdom. Overall, I generally prefer not to see the champion in the tournament.
Fair enough. What did you think of this, Christy?
Yeah, I liked it. I generally like Juice. I generally like Omega. Omega's been wrestling injured, so that may have something to do with things. But I like the contrast of Juice wrestling with an injured hand and Omega wrestling with an injured foot. It's, even though Omega is not showing anyone that he's injured. Yeah, Omega's had a good tournament, I think. I think his match versus Goto is still one of my favorites, obviously. And, the thing with Omega is that there's so much riding on the end of this G1, more so than what he's doing now, because everyone's still looking at him versus Ibushi. Whatever he does, it's all a road to for a lot of people.
Yeah. True.
If that makes sense. So I loved this match, and I love that Juice said at the end that if he loses every match this tournament, he's quitting wrestling altogether. He says something like that in the backstage comments. So there's really something riding on Juice winning, and there's really something riding on Omega winning, because he has to reach Ibushi and then be the best wrestler in the world, as he likes to call himself.
Yeah, well, that's Miko Satomura. Anyway.
I said he likes to call himself that.
No, he's wrong, but anyway. Sorry, controversial comments. But Miko Satomura signed for the WWE for the Mae Young Classic, so that made me happy this week, because more people will find out about the greatness of Miko Satomura.
She is wonderful.
She is. She's fantastic. But just to round up, because that's the only B night we're doing on this show, Kenny Omega is now leading the block with 8 points. Sonata in second with 6, joint with Tetsuya Naito. Bunch of people on 4, and 2 for Toru Yano, and bringing up the rear is Juice Robinson on 0 still. So plenty for Juice to get his teeth into in the rest of the tournament. So we move on to night 9. Minoru Suzuki won.
Are we not doing Sonata Ibushi?
My bad. Sorry. Sonata on the B night, Sonata defeated Kota Ibushi. See, I started talking about Mika Satomura and everything goes out the window. Anyway, Sonata defeats Kota Ibushi in 22 minutes and 23 seconds in an absolutely astounding match. And it was pitched as two guys who were in similar places in their career, have had similar roads to New Japan Pro Wrestling and similar roads to the G1 Climax, which they do. And they look a lot more alike now than they did a couple of years ago. And certainly it's interesting to watch two guys who've kind of rebelled. They haven't gone through the standard way of Japanese pro wrestling. They haven't stuck with one company. So Sonata has been a real nomad in comparison to most guys in Japanese wrestling, because usually, when you certainly used to be a cradle-to-grave experience, you'd start with New Japan or All Japan, and you'd stay there till you retired, because there wasn't really any other options. And now that's not the way of things. You know, you look at Ishimori, who's all over the place. Okada even started in Dragon Gate, or he started training with Ultima Dragon. You know, Ishii was a war guy before this. So people are coming to New Japan from different directions, and it really shows a mix in the style. There's a lot more King's Road style wrestling in New Japan now than as much as there is Strong Style, because it's becoming this amalgamation of different styles. It's moving on. That's why they say Strong Style evolved. Christy, what did you think of this match? Because I know the two guys are favorites of yours.
Yeah, well, I was always going to love this one. I think everyone was looking forward to this one because it's just two very talented guys that are just below where we want them to be. Yeah. We want them to be in the top of the company, and they're just not quite there yet. But we know that they've got what it takes to get there. So we want to see how they get there and how they do together. I just really love this one. Sonata was great. He met everything that Ibushi threw at him. There were moonsaults. There were crazy spots. There were Ibushi looking at Sonata like he was the love of his life. It was ridiculous and wonderful and really, really entertaining.
That is the other theme of the Troopini show. According to Chelsea, we bring the gay at certain points. And this was a point where it's perfectly acceptable to bring the gay, because it was.
Well, Ibushi looked at the end of the match, Ibushi couldn't take his eyes off of him. And he's really handsome. That might be it. But on the other hand, it's also like Ibushi recognized something in Sonata. Like, you're a guy like me.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
You can go, you're athletic, you're talented, you're a nomad. Sonata's been all over the world. Ibushi is also someone who's not keen on staying in the same spot for very long. He likes going all over. So I think Ibushi just recognizes something of himself in Sonata as well. So that might also have been it.
Okay then. Mo, what were your thoughts on this match?
Yeah, well, you can't disagree about the sex appeal in this one, can you? Fine, gentlemen, aren't they, in Sonata and Ibushi. So definitely trying to outdo each other in that respect. But also when it came to the contest itself, it was pleasingly competitive and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was possibly just slightly the best match of the night, or perhaps on an even keel with Ishii versus Sabre Jr. So, Sonata is somebody who has his critics. There's people that think he's a bit too bland and his style doesn't quite work with some of the other guys at main event level. But I think he's come on really well this year. And I thought this was another example of just how he has improved. And Ibushi has been just a magnificent performer for a number of years now. So you don't expect anything less than a great match where he's concerned. But I really enjoy this and the pace that they went at. Over 20 minutes to work this kind of style, have a very competitive, thrilling finish. I enjoyed it. And it was good to see Sonata get the victory at the end as well. That was a slight surprise. I thought Ibushi would get the win here. So that was pleasing all round.
Excellent. Right then, we move on to night 9, which had Minoru Suzuki winning a match. It was very good and made us all very happy. Mo, what did you think?
Yeah, so a bit like Night 7, I thought it was a good match, but certainly not something that was a blowaway contest. With Suzuki, he is almost turning into this kind of Japanese version of Terry Funk, this kind of guy who, he's going into his 50s and he's becoming middle-aged and crazy. And, he is somebody that, if anything, as he gets older, is getting better as a worker. And, I have really enjoyed seeing him in this tournament and just generally this year. I was out there in Milton Keynes, at the Revolution Pro event. Which a lot of people thought was a New Japan authentic show. That's another story. And, he is just a fantastic, fantastic talent. And, it was good to see. But for me, it was a match that, again, didn't really light anything up compared to some of his work earlier in the tournament a couple of weeks ago.
Okay. Christy, what did you think of this?
Suzuki is great, but I didn't watch the match.
Okay, then. We'll move on to the next match, which was Evil defeating Hangman Page in 15 minutes and 40 seconds. This, again, is a kind of place where two guys are kind of similarly kind of placed. Hangman Page is kind of high up in Bullet Club, and Evil is kind of high up in LIJ. But their career trajectories are slightly different. So Evil was going to win this one, pretty sure it was. But 15 minutes and 40 seconds was thoroughly entertaining. I really did enjoy it. I like watching Evil wrestle. He's so good. And Hangman Page, again, impressing. What did you think of it, Christy?
I really love Evil. I've always loved Evil. He works so hard. He takes the biggest bumps in LIJ sometimes, and he always seems hurt, but he always works through, and he's just a lot of fun. And Paige has been great this tournament. He's really surprised me. I thought he was great, but he's done better than I thought he would, even. And these two worked really well together, I think. I do think that Evil injured himself, though. I think he tweaked his knee during this match. And during today's show, you could see that it was taped. So he must have done something to his knee, and that's not good. And he always seems injured during the G1, and I feel really bad for him.
Yeah, it's unfortunately, it's just the way of the world that you're going to get injured eventually, just because the amount of the guys who were held together with sticky tape by the end of this tournament. They do their very level best to minimize it. That's the reason why Yano's in the tournament, is just basically to give guys an easy night. But you can't have two Yanos. There is only one. Some would say that's a good thing. it's just unfortunate for him, and hopefully he gets better soon and can continue in the tournament. Mo, what did you think of this one?
Yeah, again, Paige continued to impress. He's absolutely agree with Chris. He had just been having a really fine tournament, and I think he really shows something. I think that, another couple of years, and he could perhaps be that person that, some people feel Jay White is or should be. I think Adam Page, for me, has a bit more in the way of charisma, and also athletically, I think he's slightly ahead of Jay White as well. So it'd be interesting to see how both their careers develop over the next couple of years. But if I was to tip one of the two horses, I'd actually go with Page as becoming the bigger star. Evil, you know what to expect with him. Very solid, very dependable. And I thought this was a really good match. Interesting to see where they go with Evil, though. Again, he's there almost making up the numbers. He's at one or two levels below the very elite guys. But at a certain point in time, they need to freshen things up. And, if they do and need to elevate somebody from the upper mid card, who better than Evil? I really think that his work, his all-round package is something that arguably belongs at that level, if not in the next few months, and certainly in the next year or 18 months.
Yeah, definitely. I think they'd probably put him towards the Intercontinental Championship or the Never Open Weight Championship sooner rather than later. I mean, he had a short run with it 2 years ago when he took it off Shibata for a week, and I think he probably deserves a bit more than that. Obviously, they had the tag run with Sanada earlier this year, but kind of rang into the Young Bucks at just the wrong time, though they had some cracking matches with them. So we'll see what happens. I think he's probably time to shine. We'll probably come in the tag league, and I think that might be a story they tell there, and we'll see what happens with that. Next match up was Bad Luck Farley defeating Jay White in another interference-laced affair, but Bad Luck Farley came out on top in the end, 11 minutes and 42 seconds. One thing I'd noticed, as this is a story, I meant to mention it last time, but I didn't talk about it, is the fact that Matthew Sami, who's the junior referee in New Japan Pro Wrestling, compared to Red Shoes, who's the senior referee, last year made quite a few bum decisions, and a lot of this year's G1 Climax has been about him asserting himself and making himself look, you know, bigger, which is really hard. And I think that's probably the reason why they did it, because he's done a lot of disqualifications. He's been very harsh on people compared to last year, where he lost a couple of people matches because of bum decisions. And I think that's an interesting story that they've told in comparison to Red Shoes, who's obviously the boss and stoic at all times. But it's interesting to me that you're even giving storylines to the referees now, in a subtle way. Mo, what did you think of this matchup?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I mean, I mentioned obviously that the interference is something that I'm not quite as aggrieved about compared to others online. But for me, it didn't quite work as well here, and maybe that's just because not Jay White's biggest fan either, but it was another missed opportunity. I thought he was against another heel, and he could have again tried to do a bit more in terms of advancing the fact he's a heel by trying to out heel this big monster heel, and there wasn't really much of that. So all it was kind of a match, and then towards the end the interference came. But I didn't think leading up to that point it was developing into anything particularly great. I mean, it wasn't a boring match. It wasn't too slow. It worked at a decent pace. But it just wasn't really doing anything for me. And the crowd really didn't seem to be all that into it. And then, again, we saw yet another ref bump with Red Shoes. And, you know, that was just, for me, by this point, night nine overkill. We've had it almost every single night. And I just thought, oh, for God's sake, come on. Ref bumps are fine, but not every single night. So, you know, there were some people absolutely shitted all over this match, and I can understand why. I didn't think it was a bad match, but for me, it was just average, and that was about it.
Fair enough. Christy, what did you think of it?
I thought it was fine. Not one of my favourites. I liked that in the beginning, White got ahead of the interference and took out Tangaloa right away. I thought that was really smart, unlike all the other guys who just allow Tangaloa to be there and knowing that they're going to be attacked from behind. And I like that the storylines, both storylines for the Bullet Club OGs were furthered, and the one for Chaos as well, because Jay White didn't get any help whatsoever. He had two Chaos guys at ringside, Rocky Romero and I think Yohei?
Yeah.
Maybe? Mm-hmm. And neither of them interfered for him. And he talked about that as well in the backstage comments afterwards. So I like that those two stories were helped along a bit more, and that Jay White is starting to talk to his Chaos mates, like, where were you? Why did no one help me? But that was really all that interested me about this match.
Yeah, I can understand that. It kind of moved along. It was all right. It moved things along, but that's kind of sometimes you have to have matches like that, really. So, yeah. All right, the next match, though, was a lot more interesting. Hiroshi Tanahashi gets to 8 points, and he defeats Togi Makabe in 12 minutes. Makabe, again, pulls out another really good performance. It wasn't as intense as his match with Okada earlier in the week, but it was certainly a lot of fun. Christy, what did you think of this?
I liked it. I'm a very new fan. So Makabe is an acquired taste still.
Right.
I think the difference is that in the last 2 years that I've been watching, we've been told that Makabe isn't important.
Yes.
If that makes sense. He's important for the Japanese fans who can see him on television and on TV shows and meet him and that kind of thing. But for foreign fans who've never seen the other Makabe before what he is now, he's just another guy, another uncle.
Yeah.
And he has good matches, but there's nothing that you can really connect with. you've got Kojima, who has his online presence, and he talks to fans, and he's bread uncle, and he's got that kind of thing, but Makabe doesn't really have that. So I like him, but I like him specifically for the matches that he has with guys like Tanahashi. Mm. And there's not really that connection yet. I have no idea that makes any sense.
No, I completely agree with you. I think that's the thing. I think it's an accessibility issue. Like I was saying, yeah. Like when you look at the Rev Pro Tours, like the shows that Mo was talking about, the Super Strong Style Evolve shows, he's not on those shows because he's got too busy a schedule in Japan, and he hasn't. I'm pretty sure he hasn't gone to the Strong Style Evolved or the G1 specials either. So he's not got, you know, he's not done excursions to Ring of Honor recently either. So it's a guy, Ishii goes over, he won the Ring of Honor TV championship, and there's a lot of the upper guys go, and there's some of the lower guys go, but he's one of those guys, I guess, because he can, you know, write his own ticket now. He's a made man in New Japan. He's like, yeah, I don't really want to go, or he's too busy with TV appearances. But there is a disconnect there between the Western fans and what Makabe has to offer in New Japan Pro Wrestling, and I think that's part of it. And I think what you're saying as well is, like, because he came along, his purple patch was before Western fans were into New Japan en masse. It doesn't help him either.
Mm-hmm. And I respect him because I've been told that I should, and I've been shown that I should, but I haven't been. It hasn't been a road that I've gone with him, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no. I mean, the biggest singles match he's had at Wrestle Kingdom lately was when he wrestled Bad Luck Fale at Wrestle Kingdom 9, I think. And it was not very good. And that probably is also sour people, because that was the first time New Japan was done to a big audience. It was the one where Jeff Jarrett organized I can't remember which app it was at the time, but it was like the first worldwide audience kind of show that they'd done with Wrestle Kingdom 9. And it kind of, like, I guess it probably didn't put a too great a taste in people's mouths, because it wasn't his fault, you know. His wrestling Farley at the time was incredibly green. You know,
yeah,
so.
And also Honma got injured, and that didn't help either.
No,
you're in... that's a huge part of who he is as well.
Yeah, when you're in a faction of two people and one of them gets injured,
yeah,
it doesn't help out, does it really? Mo, what did you think of this match?
Yeah, I thought it was a good, fun match. You know, these are two guys that know each other well. Obviously been in the company for many, many years now. And, you know, they understand what each other will do. But it was just a good match. You know, wasn't going to be one of these outstanding matches, and given they're only working about 11, 12 minutes. But for what they did, it was perfectly fine. You know, Tanahashi is somebody who, you know, is now 41 years of age and, you know, still isn't quite showing that he is past his prime. I think that he's towards the tail end, obviously, of his peak. And, you know, against the likes of Makabe and even against Fale, you know, he can go out and have, you know, very enjoyable matches. So that's all credit to him. And he's having a good tournament so far. But whether he will win it or not, I highly doubt it. I mean, it really, really wouldn't serve much of a purpose if he did. You know, I feel there are others, younger ones, who deserve to get that win now. And they might even decide that actually to add to somebody like Nakada's legacy, maybe get him to win number three. But Tanahashi still has a valuable role to play. He still is one of the preeminent workers in the business in New Japan. And, you know, this match was another example of that. Not a fantastic match, certainly not, but certainly more than fun.
I kind of get the feeling that Tanahashi hasn't slowed down by choice. I think he's slowed down because they need him to slow down, if you see what I mean, because they're trying to make Naito and Omega and Okada shine as the aces of the company. And to me, it's like, it's not like Tanahashi's got worse. He hasn't. He's just as good as he ever was, but he's getting shorter matches with lesser opponents because they need to make those three guys shine. I think Tanahashi could probably still go at the main event level and still be a worthy IWGP heavyweight champion. It's just that now's not his time.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he's not like an AJ Styles, who, you know, is very much dependent on his physicality or his athleticism, rather, as a key element of him as an in-ring worker. You know, Tanahashi is somebody who physically can slow down and still, you know, in terms of what he does in the ring, not really adversely affect it. So, you know, I agree. He is somebody who absolutely can still go to the level he was, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago. And indeed, he had a match. Was it against Okada back in April?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Which was, you know, one of the great matches of all time, in my view. It was an amazing match. So, you know, it clearly showed that he still can go more, you know, better than all but a very few, small handful of people in the business. But you're right. I think that he intentionally, you know, obviously with the company involved, it's taken a backward step to allow others to step up. And, you know, that's a very honourable thing to do. And I just wish others share that same kind of selfless mentality that Tanahashi has shown. And for me, that just adds to his legendary status.
Yeah, to be fair, New Japan had that problem 11 years ago. Oh, 11 to 15 years ago before Gedo and Jado took over the booking of the company, because people wouldn't do that. And that's the reason why, to be blunt, the company went in the toilet for a very long period of time, and it's taken a long, long time to get back to where it was before. You know, we're not quite at, well, we're not near, nowhere near at the hottest period the company had in the 1990s, where you were going to the Tokyo Dome 4 times a year. But it's a lot closer to where it was at the end of the 90s than it was at the beginning of the 2000s, thankfully. So,
oh, good grief. I mean, tell me about it. You know, the 2001 to 2005 era was just so painful. I mean, watching New Japan Pro Wrestling at that time was an absolute chore. It was just dire, absolutely dire. And, you know, Pro Wrestling Noah at that time was by far and away my favorite promotion in Japan, because their in-ring product just smoked New Japan all day and night. It was so much better, so superior. And it's just a remarkable turnaround that they invested in youth, backed youth, and, you know, it's paid dividends. I mean, New Japan is, you know, so successful now because they believed in the youth of Tanahashi and others, and, you know, didn't allow short-termism to override long-term thinking. And, you know, kudos to them for that.
Yeah, definitely. Right, the main event of Night 9 was Kazuchika Okada defeating Yoshihashi in a Battle of the Chaos Guys. 19 minutes and 40 seconds. I'm going to class this as another Yoshihashi lumpy but good match. I thoroughly enjoyed it, though it won't be in any 5-star recommendations anytime soon because it was a bit all over the place. But it told the story of Yoshihashi having to stand up to the boss, and that's what it did. And, you know, getting Yoshihashi to kick out of a rainmaker, no matter how rum that rainmaker was, was definitely worth it, because it gave Yoshihashi a bit more of an edge in going into this match, because it kind of felt like he was very nervous. That was the story he was trying to tell. He wasn't getting everything right, and then all of a sudden he kicks out the rainmaker and everything clicks for him. But he still loses anyway. Mo, what did you think of this matchup?
Yeah, well, even before he got into the ring, his hair was a telltale sign. it wasn't perky and vibrant like it was two G1 nights earlier. It was down and looking a bit self-defeated. So that was a sign of things to come, unfortunately, for him. But, you know, sorry.
No, that's the kind of thing we love here on the Shrewpenny Show. That's going to be something we're going to use now, a gauge of hair.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, if for those longer term fans who are listening who remember Power Slam, my esteemed editor Finn Martin often liked to talk about certain people's dress sense, and so it would be his hair. So get used to it.
No, that's
but yeah. So I mean, this match. Look, it was another really fun match. For me, it was. Slightly the match of the night, but again, you know, it wasn't up against much in the way of competition. You know, this block certainly hasn't been able to match the other block when it comes to match quality, but you know, Okada is a guy that, you know, cannot have a bad match. I think it's almost impossible. And you know, he went out there and had a very fun match. And Yoshihashi, I mean, for 11 months of the year, he's quite a forgettable character, but during the G1, he does certainly liven up, become an interesting individual. And, you know, they certainly brought it here. It wasn't, for me, anything that was quite a 4-star level or above, but perfectly enjoyable.
What did you think of this, Christy?
Well, I like Yoshihashi, so I generally like matches where he has to wrestle Okada. it doesn't happen often, but when it does, I enjoy it. And I really like this match because Yoshihashi is no one's favorite, usually. But when he fights back, he's the real underdog. And you really get a sense that he wants to do well. And it takes a while for the audience to get with that. But in the end, the audience believed. In the end, they really got into it. They really started chanting his name. They were the oohing and aahing when Okada just kicked out, started at the end. And I really think that they believe that Yoshihashi might win for maybe 2 minutes. And not before and not after, but those 2 minutes, I think they believed. But of course he didn't. And that's the story of Yoshihashi. It's like New Japan doesn't want him to get anywhere either, because they work against him. He works against himself because he's anxious, he's nervous, he's not confident. But they also turn him into that character. And maybe that's the character they want him to be. Commentary constantly talks about how he's not good enough, he's not going to win. Other Chaos members talk about how he's not good enough and he's not going to win. So it's a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy, I think. How are your audience members going to believe that he can win if even commentary doesn't think he can win? So that's the story of Yoshihashi for me. And it's good enough for me. I don't need everyone to be Naito or Okada.
No,
But yeah, that's the story of this match. Okada is an asshole to Yoshihashi and he still loses.
I think Kenny Omega pointed that out on Twitter this week. Someone posted, what's the point of Chase Owens? And Kenny replied with, I can't remember exactly what he replied with, but he said, because you need Chase Owens.
You need two people to row, I think.
It takes two people to row a boat. That was the idea, you know, and that's true. You know, Chase, we all love Chase. Because Chase works really hard, you know, but he's never going to win the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. And there's nothing wrong with that because you still need guys in the middle.
You can't have 20 Okadas and then no one else.
No, that's it. And, you know,
who's Okada going to beat?
Yeah. And Chase Owens has punched well above his weight in the international wrestling scene for a very long time, you know.
Yeah.
So, anywho, but yes. So that concludes our coverage. Just to give you the rundown of the positions on the end of that, I'll go over the B block matches again, just to make sure. The B block rankings again. Kenny Omega's on top with 8. Sanada's on second place with 6. Joint with Tetsuya Naito. Bunch of people on 4. And right at the bottom, we have got Tama Tonga on 2 and Juice Robinson on 0. On the A block, you have got Minoru Suzuki, Kazuchika Okada on 6, but Hiroshi Tanahashi is leading on 8, which surprised some people. Jay White is on 6 as well. Bad Luck Fale and Togi Makabe on 4, and 2 points for Hangman Page and Yoshihashi. So everybody's had a win in that block.
And Evil?
Evil is on 8 points. That's true. He's tying first place with Hiroshi Tanahashi. So, sorry, I didn't mean to miss Evil out.
All the good hair is on top.
All the good hair is on top. true. It is very good hair. So,
good observation.
Yes, very nice. I would like to thank my guests today. First of all, Chrissy from Wrestling Sexism and New Japan Gifts. So, has you got anything you would like to plug social media-wise?
No, just that. I'm making lots and lots of gifts, and it's driving me mad, but it's also really fun. So maybe check it out if you have time.
Okay then, and Mr. Mo Chatra, thank you very much for your time. Have you got any social media stuff you'd like to plug, or other podcasts that you are on?
No, thanks. I do a lot of other non-wrestling stuff, which I'm not going to bore listeners with in terms of podcasts. But no, you already got my plug in about the Daily Miracle for the return of British Wrestling to ITV. Thanks for that. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Mo Chatra. I'd advise you not to, because I'm really crap at Twitter, so
you're
my
not.
Tweets are never interesting. Please avoid.
You're pretty good at Twitter. I like your Twitter. It's good.
But sometimes.
Yep.
It's okay.
Tonight you can find The World of Sport on ITV, or if you, well, you probably, you're going to be listening to this afterwards because I'm not going to put it up till tomorrow morning. So if you want to go on ITV Player in the UK, you can find it there. I'm sure somebody will put it up somewhere for you to find it in the rest of the world, probably by around about 6:05. I'm sure you'll find it if you want to watch it. But there's a lot of New Japan guys there. Harry Smith as British Bulldog Jr., Will Ospreay's in there, and some fine, fine British talent as well. I'm looking forward to see what Shah Samuels does on this particular run, and a bunch of other people that you will have definitely have heard of and will enjoy the matches. And it is great to see World of Sport back on British television. I was kind of disappointed when the debut that they did 2 years ago didn't go as far as it should have done, so I'm really, really pleased that it's back. And we'll see how that goes there. We will probably have a review of that at some point. We've also got a review. People have been pestering me to review Slammiversary as well, and it's like, I've only got so many hours in the day, I can't watch any more wrestling than I already am doing. But I did get half of Slammiversary listened to this, watch this morning, so we'll maybe get that done as well. Having said that, I'm off on holiday for 4 days, so there won't be a show until the end of next week. It depends on everything happening stuff. We'll see. You can find me at Sheriff Lone Star on Twitter. You can find the show at Troopany Show on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook and Patreon, where you can keep the Troopany Show free forever for everyone. That's it from the G1 Climax so far. We'll be back next week with more coverage of nights 10, 11, and 12. Possibly more, possibly a bunch of other stuff as well. It all depends on how much time I have. Take care, and we'll see you soon. Bye.